Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking nearly 50 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
What does it take to reduce crime in Anchorage? Stricter laws and long sentences for offenders? More programs to assist with employment, housing, and mental health? All of the above? The state and city of Anchorage are partnering to address public safety in the state's largest city. What will this partnership involve, and what are the priorities and strategies for keeping people safe? City and state officials join us to discuss the details today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. In a recent speech, Governor Mike Dunleavy noted that crime across most of Alaska has dropped significantly, a more than 40% reduction from 2018 to 2024. Violent crime dropped nearly 20% in that same period. The governor said, quote, "If you take Anchorage out of the mix, our state's overall crime rate is well below the national average." Anchorage's chief of police likely wants to discuss the nuance in those numbers. Alaska's violent crime rate has been at or near the top in the nation for decades. However, a recent story by the Juneau Independent reported that Alaska is no longer included in federal reports on national crime rates because of data collecting gathering problems in some districts here. But debating where Alaska lands nationally on the crime scale doesn't help lower rates of criminal behavior. So what does? Coordination, cross-training, and more prosecutions are part of the mix in a new public safety partnership between the state's attorney general and the municipality of Anchorage. Here to help us understand how it came together and what it will endeavor to do to lower crime rates is Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case. Welcome, Chief Case. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also in the studio with us today is Eva Gardner. Eva is the Anchorage's municipal attorney. Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. And on the phone with us is John Skidmore. John is the Deputy Attorney General for the state's Criminal Division. Welcome, John. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Lori. I'm actually not the Deputy Attorney General right now. Angie Kemp is. I have been designated to head up this initiative that the Attorney General has we're here to talk about this morning.
Okay. Well, thank you for that correction, and sorry about that.
That's right. Okay.
So for all of you, talk about how this originated. We were talking a little before the show started. Did the state approach the city? The city asked the state to partner? Kind of sounds like it was sort of a mutual thing. Ava?
Sure. Thanks for the question. So there, a lot of people don't necessarily understand that public safety in Anchorage is really a joint state-municipal project. The municipality prosecutes all the misdemeanor crimes in Anchorage, and the state prosecutes the felonies. And those two systems really should be talking to each other and should be working together. And the Anchorage Police Department, of course, is a municipal agency. So over the past year plus, there had been a couple of discrete areas where the municipality had approached the state about potential cooperation. And last fall, we approached Mr. Skidmore with one of those potential areas of cooperation, and learned that the Attorney General was actually very interested in partnering with Anchorage in a broader way on public safety. So we all got pretty excited and started talking about ways we could partner.
All right. Anything you'd like to add to that, Chief?
No, I think that, you know, when you look at it from a law enforcement perspective, there are so many factors that come into, you know, making a significant impact in crime rates, fear of crime within a community. And because of the system that we have here in Alaska, where the municipality prosecutes the misdemeanors and the state prosecutes the crime. So think about, for example, if you arrest someone for a felony and there's a felony charge and a misdemeanor charge, you know, that's a complexity that we have to deal with here in Anchorage that other jurisdictions don't necessarily have to deal with. And it can make the process a little bit clunky sometimes. So the better communication and cooperation you have between the municipality and the state, the smoother that system works. And I think on top of that, I think both the state and the municipality recognizes over the last several years, some of these crimes like theft, trespass, some of the crimes that are local businesses have been greatly impacted, as well as the community here in Anchorage has been impacted. Those cases weren't being prosecuted at the rates that, you know, certainly law enforcement would want them to. And so having the municipal attorney's office as well as the district attorney's office prosecuting those crimes is something that APD is never going to discourage. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure not. And we'll talk more about that in a bit. John, Mr. Skidmore, there are three priority areas. Describe them and how they were decided on.
Sure. I think that Chief Case gave a great introduction to some of those priorities in the sense that there were crimes. Theft, for example, is a crime that is at different levels, sometimes a misdemeanor and other times a felony. And there were certain theft cases that weren't being prosecuted, or theft cases that were being prosecuted, but maybe not being prosecuted as aggressively as they could be. And I think really what happened is, from the state's perspective, the Attorney General, Steve Cox, came in and said, you know, there's some of these, what he thinks of as quality of life crimes that really needed more focused attention. For example, we all go to the grocery store, and I think we've all noticed that in grocery stores or some of the big box stores, there's more and more of the merchandise that is being locked up behind doors. And now just to take it and walk up to the cash register, you've got to get an associate to help you to unlock those doors. And all of that is really a response by those retailers of increased theft from those stores. And so the idea was, we need to do something about that. APD actually has really good data and statistics about the number of theft incidences and the volume of those theft instances over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years. And so as part of the collaboration, we sat down and developed a list of top offenders. So it's not that every theft crime suddenly gets this heightened focus, but rather if we can pick off the top offenders who are coming in 5, 10, 12 times over and over and over again, stealing large amounts, if we can pick off those individuals, we actually think that it will help us reduce crime overall when it comes to theft crimes, at least for retailers. That was the first area that we really identified. The second area that we've identified involves drug crimes. And drug crimes are another thing that the state, and I actually think the country, has been evolving in its thinking about how to approach those types of offenses. And a lot of possessory crimes for drugs were reduced to misdemeanors. And then that was modified to say, well, if you've possessed it multiple times, it can be a felony again. But that initial first possession crime frequently was going unaddressed. And drugs, unfortunately, are one of those types of crimes that can proliferate and sort of impact all other sectors of crimes that we see in the city or in the state. And so trying to find a way to come together and partner on those is the next step that we're working towards. And we've got some ideas focused on that. And then the third area really is going to be to come back around and look at sexual assaults and domestic violence and determine if there aren't some additional ways that we can partner and work together. We've always had strong partnerships in that area. And so we really wanted to try to address the theft and the drugs first, but we want to come back and see if we can't make additional efforts in that DV and NSA area as well.
Are these priorities equal, or do you plan to take them one at a time? How will it, the kind of this program, roll out?
Definitely not taking them one at a time. You know, our approach really is to kind of try to look at these things from multiple different angles at the same time. So if you back, you know, kind of all the way up to July of 2024, and you look at the progression of the things that we've been focusing on as a municipality, you know, it started with encampments, because that was the really big problem that everyone assumed was creating all the bad things in Anchorage. And we knew that that's just one small piece of the puzzle. And so it wasn't just, we'll deal with encampments and then we'll figure out what we do later. It was developing a plan that was really going to be laid out over multiple years. And so the encampments were the first thing while we were already working on additional things. We were already looking at laws. You know, as soon as Eva took over, you know, we had a meeting to talk about, hey, how can we change codes that's going to be a little more beneficial. And we see we've done 2 code updates so far. So that started, you know, well over a year ago. Okay. So changing some of the codes. We've added, particularly with domestic violence, we've added 2 detectives that specifically work only on domestic violence cases. Nearly all those cases that they work on are strangulation cases. So we didn't have those 2 detectives 18 months ago. We have them now. Last summer, there were 2 cases that the district attorney's office successfully prosecuted for felony-level strangulation, one of which I believe was the first in the state. Those are difficult cases to prosecute. They're difficult cases to put together, particularly when you're going to prosecute them at the felony level. Much easier to prosecute at the misdemeanor for those types of crimes.
Why is that? Why is it easier at the misdemeanor level?
So when you think about strangulation, think a little bit more forensically, collecting the evidence like a sexual assault. So we take those victims to the multidisciplinary center where we process the sexual assault victims. So we're collecting evidence in the same manner off the body as we do in sexual assault cases. So some of the injuries, for example, in strangulation cases, you can't see it apparent. You know, you think immediately if somebody's strangled, you're going to have handprints around their neck. That's not the case. A lot of the injuries. That's correct. It's not like the movies. A lot of the injuries are on the inside of the lip or underneath the eyelid, or where you find some of the injuries. Some of them don't show up immediately after the incident. So it's just a lot longer. The interviews are a lot more in depth because, you know, you have to get down to details that you understand the victim may not know occurred. Sometimes these victims don't know and don't remember that they lost consciousness. It's an important detail. So the interviews have to be very, very careful. And so the partnership between the police department, the forensic staff, and the district attorneys that are prosecuting it has to be on point. Otherwise, these cases just aren't going to have enough evidence where we're going to convince a jury that a felony level crime took place.
If you think about it another way, Lori,
sure.
If you look just at the law, in order to do a strangulation case, you're prosecuted under what's called a dangerous instrument, which in most instances is, you know, a knife, a gun, a bat or something. But dangerous instrument also has a subsection that says it's hands or other body parts or other objects when used to impede normal breathing or circulation of blood by applying pressure to the throat or neck or obstructing the nose or mouth. And so really what Chief Case is talking about is that it sometimes is obvious that in a misdemeanor assault, we just have to show that somebody was injured. But to show that felony level strangulation, we actually have to show that there was that impeding of blood or air through the nose or the throat by actions that the defendant took. And that's not as easy as simply saying someone was injured.
I can thank you for helping us better understand the complexities there in some of these cases and how difficult they are to bring to prosecution. I want to back up just for a second before we move deeper into this partnership plan and talk about the retail theft component. I myself have witnessed people in stores walking toward the door and seeing the security staff say, you know, please stop, please stop. And they just keep going and leave. And one of my sons works in loss prevention at a couple of the stores here in town. And their options are pretty limited as far as what they really can do other than just trespassing people out and not letting them come back in. But they can't touch them if they're grabbing things and going out. So did you find that that type of crime did it start to ramp up maybe during the pandemic or at some point in time where you started to notice more of that sort of theft? And is it that the folks who engage in that sort of behavior let each other know, hey, this is pretty easy. You can just walk in, walk out. Nobody's going to stop you. They got to call the police. And by the time the police get there, you're long gone. What can citizens do in those instances? Somebody was saying something about citizen arrest to me the other day, and I said, I have no idea really what that means or what you're allowed to do in that respect, but it kind of seems like that's what loss prevention people would kind of have to do, is sort of a citizen's arrest. Is that right?
That's correct. The loss prevention officers essentially are effecting a citizen's arrest if they were to grab onto somebody that stole from the business that they're working for. And each company, each business has a different set of rules for their employees. And over the course of time, a lot of those companies have determined that they didn't want their loss prevention officers to physically engage with people, didn't want to assume that liability to have their employees, you know, have a risk of getting injured while they're, you know, conducting their duties. And so over the course of time, we've seen loss prevention officers less likely to engage because of the rules that they're playing under that's given to them by their business. Now, if you go back 10, 15 years, we saw loss prevention officers at some of these businesses that they would physically grab people and effect arrests more so than now. And they got just a liability question that those businesses are taking on. But there's some other factors too that have come involved. You know, the increase of technology is also helping us out drastically. Us engaging with the different businesses and kind of letting them know what's helpful in prosecution, the type of stuff that they want to look for, the type of evidence, if you will, that they collect, the video cameras that they have. You know, a lot of places have video cameras and then they pull the video footage and look at it and it's not super helpful. So upgrading their video cameras, mm-hmm. which in today's world is not that much money. Information that they want to get from the individual. For instance, when they trespass someone, you'd be surprised. A lot of businesses won't identify the person that they trespass, and then they come back and they commit a theft, and they were here a day or two earlier, and if they would have identified them, it would have helped because then they could tell us. They could give us that video footage. We immediately know who the person is. So that education process with the businesses around Anchorage has made a pretty significant impact. And then using that technology and giving us access to some other technology as well.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're discussing lowering crime in Alaska's largest city through a new partnership between the state and the city. In the studio with me today is Anchorage Police Department Chief Sean Case and Anchorage Municipal Attorney Eva Gardner. On the phone is John Skidmore with the Attorney General's Office, and John is helping to head up this partnership with the state and city. I know that you had kind of, there was sort of some mutual back and forth between the state and the city, but was there something that sort of prompted this larger convergence coming together at this time? Anchorage and Alaska have had elevated crime rates compared to other states for very many years. What changed that prompted this now?
So in my view, and the chief may disagree, but it's the municipality's increased focus on public safety under Mayor LaFrance. So when, just to back up in time, spring of 2024, a lot of the public safety systems were not working well. The APD was understaffed. We didn't have enough police officers out there on the streets enforcing laws. The municipal prosecutor's office was at about half staffing and not able to bring cases to trial. The court system was really backlogged, and you need all those pieces to get a case through. And the reason why we care about getting cases through is that it creates accountability, right? It creates consequences for violating the law. So coming in, there was a big, you know, coming into the new administration, there was a big emphasis on public safety, getting all those systems working. And we got to a point where, you know, in the fall of last year, APD was staffed up enough to have a dedicated retail theft unit. So Chief can talk more about that if he chooses. But that unit was going out and really working with retail businesses to ensure that they were able to enforce shoplifting laws. And on our side, we wanted to make sure on prosecution that municipal prosecution could pick up those cases and push them through the system if appropriate. But some of those cases are felonies, right? Three misdemeanor thefts in a certain period of time over a certain dollar value, that can be charged as a felony. Or if it's just over a certain dollar value, it can be charged as a felony. So we approached the state about working together to, you know, perhaps designate some of our prosecutors to prosecute felony theft. And that's when this came into being.
Okay. John, your thoughts about violent crime rates and just generally this partnership and what prompted its coming together now?
Well, I would say that I wouldn't just focus on violent crime rates. I focus on crime rates all across the board. And Alaska has been fortunate in that its crime rates have been trending downward for a number of years now. And I attribute a lot of that to the efforts of the administration and the support of the state legislature for funding additional resources towards public safety, for corrections, for the Department of Public Safety, and within the criminal division of the Department of Law. Adding those resources helped us focus more on some of these areas and be able to grow some of our programs. For example, within the criminal division of the Department of Law, we've been struggling to recruit people for quite some time, but we've been able to turn that around with changes in pay for attorneys, with a training program that I think is now absolutely top notch. We have two different prosecutors, former prosecutors, that are assigned to do nothing but train our new and younger prosecutors. And that's made a big difference for us. And in fact, it's that resource that's also been able to pay dividends for us in this partnership with the municipality, where we've been able to cross-designate a couple of attorneys at the municipality to handle felony crimes that aren't that much different from what the municipality was already doing. Theft and theft. What's the difference? Well, Ms. Gardner pointed it out pretty clearly. It's just the dollar value or the number of times you commit it. And so with those minor changes, it's really just about procedures. You have to use a grand jury instead of just charging by an information or complaint. And then it's about sentencing. What can happen? Those are fairly easy things to train on, but with that training unit that we have, we're now able to train others more effectively on those sorts of things. And then beyond that, I would say we had that buildup of resources, and then I really give a lot of credit to the new Attorney General, Steve Cox. He came in and said, this is something that I want to do something about, something that he had seen in his own life, just sort of being here in Anchorage, and said, this is an area that I want to work on. And it just, I mean, I find it almost miraculous. But at the same time the Muni was approaching us, we were approaching them, and we had similar ideas about how to partner together. And that made this collaboration really straightforward and easy to pull together.
Chief Case, what do you want to add here? You said in an Alaska public media story that Anchorage crime is more complicated and complex than the governor's take on it. What did you mean?
Well, half our population is here in Anchorage, and you know, this is the resource hub. And in most states, or, you know, every state likes to say, hey, we're a little bit different, but we do know that Alaska is very, very unique. Its geography, what rural Alaska looks like, what rural Alaska looks like when it meets urban Anchorage, and some of the challenges that take place when that happens. But when you have a large population base and you have a population coming in and out of Anchorage, and you look around the country, and you look at large cities around the country, the larger cities have the higher crime rates than smaller jurisdictions. So that's not a surprise that the largest city in Anchorage is going to have the higher rates of crime. So, you know, I think when you look at the complexity of it, it also goes beyond, I think, what we've already talked about. I think it's pretty simple to say if you have enough officers to respond to calls for service, and if you have prosecutors that are prosecuting the crimes, that's like everybody understands that as a base level, that that's going to be impacted or going to impact crime in an area. But we also have to talk about, you know, what's leading to the crime. Just because we have more cops on the street, more prosecution, doesn't mean that we're going to guarantee to see a crime rate go down. And you really have to look at what types of crime that you want to focus on that you know are going to have not just an impact on that one crime, but multiple crimes. So take, for example, we all remember 2016 when we had very high rates of stolen vehicles. And, you know, we changed the way that we investigated those crimes. We really focused on those stolen vehicles. We did call outs of our detectives 24 hours a day, and that led to lower crime rates in burglaries, lower crime rates in theft, because they were all, those folks were all the same people. Mm. Property crime is kind of that way too, thefts. There's a linkage between retail theft and drug cases and burglaries and some violent acts that are being taken place. And when you get involved in retail theft, those cases are a little bit easier to put together. I mean, right now, with the technology that we're using, our officers that are working these retail cases are putting together these cases in about 45 minutes. Mm. It's taking them longer to actually apply for the arrest warrant than it is to conduct the investigation and collect all the data and the information and the evidence that they need. And so you pull on that little thread of a property crime, and now we're successfully prosecuting somebody that is committing other crimes. And so we're impacting those other crimes by addressing some of these smaller crimes. And I think that's another key factor, is really looking at how we're spending our resources so that we're getting the most out of those resources.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones before we take a break. Stu is in Eagle River. Hello. Stu is probably still in Eagle River, but he's not on the phone right now. Chief, you mentioned, before we go to the break, you'd mentioned that stores, if they improve their camera systems, that helps better footage, more clarity, that makes sense. Does the city have CCTV cameras anywhere in public spaces beyond traffic? I know there's cameras that are in some traffic intersections, but what about other places in the city? Is that just something that people are really anathema about? No, I don't want to be surveilled. Or I kind of like the idea of having cameras on some of the trails where, when I'm out there with my dog, I'm wondering, especially in some of the more remote areas. And so I've wondered, are there cameras on any of these systems?
So our traffic signals, most of intersections have cameras. Now, those aren't police cameras. We didn't put them there. They weren't designed to collect evidence. They were designed by, put there for traffic engineers to monitor traffic. We have access to those cameras. Those cameras aren't the quality where we're going to be able to really positively identify people. It's just not what they're designed to do. They're still useful to us. We also have cameras in Town Square Park. So we put those up last year, and we have some other projects in the work to put some cameras in other areas of town as well. One of the areas you mentioned were trails, some of the trail systems, mm-hmm. where we see high volume. The challenge that we have with the trail system is the infrastructure that we have in Anchorage is, it's not like other cities. So we're exploring options like cellular networks versus wired networks to place cameras. We still have to solve the problem of battery powering the cameras. So it's those sorts of things that we're working through right now so that we can potentially expand the cameras that we do have throughout Anchorage.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the fact that, yes, if you have a wireless system, then you have to deal with batteries in cold conditions, and that creates all kinds of other problems. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about this new partnership between the state and the city of Anchorage to address crime as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. Anchorage Police Department Chief Sean Case is in the studio with us today, as is Anchorage's Municipal Attorney Eva Gardner. On the phone with us is John Skidmore with the Attorney General's Office, and they are here today talking about this partnership between the state and the city to help coordinate and address crime and bring more coordination to prosecuting those crimes in the future. Let's go back to Stu. He's back on the line now. Hello, Stu.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say that this mayor seems to have made quite a bit of progress in my Muldoon neighborhood with the homeless. But I'm referring now to the Alaska Journal of Commerce, January 11th, 2026 article. I think Chief Case is aware of it because he's in it. Julius Reap, the 20-year-old who was shot and killed in the Midtown Walmart location. I still don't quite understand why charges were never filed. And I'm just wondering, who would want a job where you can get shot and nobody even bothers to file charges when the incident's caught on surveillance video? And I'd like to thank the Alaska Journal of Commerce, Anchorage Daily News, for having these free newspapers so informative at the CARS location, where there's also been a shooting, and that one got closed. So anyhow, guys, I don't understand how someone can get shot on videotape and no one files charges. What is the problem with the system? Could Chief Case please respond? Though he may have already done it. I couldn't hear because I was busy working out, trying to get on the radio. Thank you.
So it's probably tough for the chief to respond to a case that's that specific. I mean, I don't know if you remember that particular case.
Lori.
And Mr. Skidmore should probably weigh in because a shooting would have clearly been a felony.
So this is John Skidmore. I'm with the Department of Law. And I'm in the Office of Special Prosecutions. I do remember that case coming in.
Okay.
And it was investigated by the Anchorage Police Department. It was referred to the Department of Law. And the case was declined for charges, not because it wasn't investigated. It was declined for charges because there was the determination that we could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the individual that fired the shots had not engaged in self-defense. That's one of the criteria that we have to look at is, can we prove the case? And in that instance, and I'm not going to get into all the details, but I will tell you it was reviewed. There was a legal determination made that it wasn't an appropriate case to file charges in because of an affirmative defense that was available.
And does that relate to what's known as stand your ground law, where people, if they feel threatened, they can shoot someone?
The stand your ground law is a modification that was made in our self-defense laws back in the early 2000s, I think it was. So yes, that is a change that was made in our laws that made self-defense more robust in allowing people to act in defense of themselves.
You no longer have a duty to retreat, if I'm understanding it correctly. Whereas before,
that is an accurate description.
Before, you were supposed to get away if you could. And now people don't have to do that. That seems to me like it would raise a whole lot of other complications. But we'll move on from that. Unless, did you want to add something, Eva?
I will say one benefit of our partnership has been better communication and feedback between the state prosecutors and the police and the municipality. And so there have been cases, you know, where we read about in the news, APD detectives investigate, it goes to the state, it doesn't get charged. We are now able to find out, you know, more detail about why, because the facts as they exist after investigation are often more detailed and more nuanced than what is available in the media reports. And so it has been good to have that feedback loop where we can then understand why a case wasn't charged, whereas before we might have been left wondering. So I think that has been at least a benefit for us of this partnership.
It must be really hard for officers, too. They put themselves at risk. They go out and look at what happened, write the reports up, hope that people are brought to justice for the crimes they commit, and then things slip through the cracks at time. How hard is that on the morale for officers?
I'm always surprised how hard it is on the morale. You know, our standard, I think it's really important to understand the standard that the officers have when they make arrests is a probable cause standard. So you heard John talk about beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the standard in a criminal trial. But the officers have a much, much lower standard where we can place somebody in an arrest and take them to jail. And then what happens after that is a much more extensive analysis of that case. And so, you know, even if everything is done perfectly right by both the officer, did a great report, great investigation, and the case is screened perfectly by the DA's office, it is surprising that a lot of officers do get quite frustrated because they see the work that they put in and they want to see those cases move forward and go to trial and get convictions, but that's not the way the system is designed.
Mm. Chief, I want to stay with you for a moment. You mentioned that in an earlier interview that you've been pushing for code changes since the LaFrance administration took the mayor's office. Talk about what you wanted to have changed and how that relates to this current partnership.
Well, I think the base thing, kind of understand the base kind of foundation is I'm a real big believer in criminal diversion. It's something I got involved in about 10 years ago. And the only way for criminal diversion to effectively work is you have to have a couple things. You have to have resources that are available. Otherwise, there's no place to divert somebody. So if you have somebody that needs a detox and you have no detox beds, that means it's really hard to say, hey, how about we set your arrest aside so that we can go get you some help that you need. Today, we have a lot more of those resources available in Anchorage than we had 2, 3, or 4 years ago. The other thing is that you need some criminal offense that the person you're offering diversion to is going to want to move away from that criminal offense and take the help. You know, there's people that you offer diversion to and they know they're going to get no time, 1 day, 2 days, and they are more than happy to take those 1 or 2 days versus putting the work into going through a program. And so adding those criminal offenses really is not part of a let's just arrest everyone and throw everyone in jail strategy. It is we need some bit of leverage, some motivation, some encouragement with not only crimes that have a sentence, crimes that are going to make it easier for officers to make arrests, but we know they're going to be prosecuted. And then that helps us push them over to the resources that we want to provide so that we can address the underlying issues. Because at the end of the day, there are many, many examples for sure where somebody goes to jail and they change their behavior. But there's also a lot of examples where they get caught in the cycle. They rearrest, reoffend, which leads to rearresting. And the underlying issue isn't being addressed. And so that's really at the heart of what this administration has really built, is getting access to those resources, having those resources available so that we can move forward with really addressing those underlying issues.
And is an increased focus on lower level crime, this is probably self-evident, but like retail theft, aimed at lowering more serious crime, do you see this as a path to stopping more worse criminal behavior by stopping people when they start that small little shoplifting stuff? If you can stop them from doing that repeatedly, do you find that that helps lower the rate of much more serious crime?
In some cases, there is some connection. Lower level crime connected to larger crime. So retail theft, burglary. Burglary is a felony. Burglary is a crime committed in somebody's home. Retail theft in a business. So there are connections to that. There are connections to distribution of drugs, retail theft. Distribution of drugs, violence, those are connected. So some of these crimes are really connected together. And so addressing those underlying crimes can have an impact on some of these larger crimes. It's not a blanket across the board, but it certainly can have an impact on the larger crimes.
Does Anchorage experience, we know that we're a fairly transient population, a lot of people coming and going, not so much in recent years as in the past, but still there's a sizable number of people that enter the state and leave the state every year. Even though we're so far away from the rest of the United States, do you find that there is a certain population of criminal folks that end up here that are leaving from other places and they end up in Anchorage? Do you find that in the mix quite a bit?
I wouldn't say we find that as high in numbers as you would think. Believe it or not, we don't think so because we're from here and we're just a short 3-hour flight to Seattle. But the rest of America thinks Alaska is on the other side of the globe. So not a lot of people coming to Alaska to get, you know, away from their criminal behavior, and therefore, you know, we're stuck with them.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Eva, describe what home rule means as it relates to cities like Anchorage that allow the city rather than the state to take on certain types of prosecutions.
Sure. So in Alaska, under Alaska law, a home rule municipality is one that has all powers not prohibited by state law, which means we have quite a lot of autonomy compared to, you know, other types of municipalities or boroughs. So this gives us the ability, for example, to create our own criminal code, which is what the municipality has done. That's why we have misdemeanor prosecutions, because we have chosen to pass our own penal code addressing misdemeanor crimes.
And John talked a little about this earlier, but Eva and John, there's no new funding for this partnership, if I understand correctly, but there will be added job duties for municipal prosecutors, and that they will be trained to prosecute felonies related to retail theft. Is it just a simple sort of switch, or help me understand what goes into changing prosecutors from only addressing misdemeanors to now being able to address felonies? John, do you want to jump in?
Well, I'll start.
Sure, thank you.
The explanation that you got on home rule, I agree with what Eva's described. However, the distinction remains under home rule is that a municipality has the ability to enact a penal code for misdemeanor crimes. It doesn't really authorize prosecutions of felonies. And really what this partnership was about was the state dedicating some resources, myself and a few other prosecutors at the Department of Law, to focus on this area, but at the same time, for the municipality to designate and focus a couple of their prosecutors. And what we've done is we've signed legal agreements that allow those prosecutors at the municipality to prosecute the felonies under state jurisdiction or authority. And then we train those folks on how to do those things. Absent that agreement, they wouldn't have been able to engage in those prosecutions. right? The municipality doesn't have a code for the felony conduct. Only the state has a statute for that. So it's that, that's really where the partnership comes in, is those agreements and then the cross-training and the increased communication that Eva talked about, as well as other communications that I think we engage in. All of that combined is really what allows this to work more effectively. Didn't require us to have more funding on either side, but just took resources that already existed and talked about how can we coordinate and better utilize everyone's resources to accomplish a common goal for both.
And I will add, there was one other piece that kind of fell into place in the last year that I think made this, the cross-designation of prosecutors possible, which is in early 2025, the municipality switched its, you know, we have a duty to provide indigent defense, so public defenders, to anyone we prosecute, right? They have a constitutional right to an attorney. And in early 2025, we shifted all of our indigent defense contracts from private firms to the State of Alaska Public Defender. And having the same defense attorneys on the other side has really simplified the process of this cross-designation, because we have the same agency, same defense attorneys on the other side of all of our prosecutions, us and the state now.
It seems, though, that you, if you're adding felony retail theft to the workload of city prosecutors, do you need more prosecutors? It seems like they're going to have a larger workload.
I will never say no to more prosecutors. But one,
Mayor, are you listening?
The mayor is very strongly supportive of prosecution. It's been a priority of hers since day one. She gets regular updates on staffing in that office. I will say we are fully staffed in prosecution for the first time since 2020, since February of 2020. And so part of this process has been seeing what we can handle. And I want to give a lot of credit to everyone in prosecution, the staff and the attorneys and municipal prosecutor Dennis Wheeler for continuing to say yes when we say, hey, how about this new thing? And they say yes. And I think that they are reaching capacity. But it has been a really wonderful exercise to see prosecution come back to full staffing, get up to full strength, and be able to take on more than they had been able to do for quite a number of years.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the state and City of Anchorage partnership on crime reduction as Talk of Alaska continues. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing the crime reduction partnership between the State of Alaska's Department of Law and the City of Anchorage. In the studio with me today is Anchorage Police Department Chief Sean Case and Anchorage Municipal Attorney Eva Gardner. On the phone with us is Department of Law's John Skidmore, who is representing the state in this partnership. Chief, I wanted to go back to you for a moment. You had mentioned earlier that APD has created two new detective positions for felony domestic violence. Are these new additional or are they reassigned detectives?
We created the two detective positions from vacant police officer positions with all of our vacancies. So we've, over the last year and a half, we have taken 20 different police officer positions that were vacant because we had a lot of them. And have converted those into other jobs. So that kind of helps towards a lot of what we're talking about here today, to include those two detective positions in addressing some areas that we really need to address.
What do these particular detectives do in their investigations that is different from other crime, and is there different training associated with it?
Absolutely. So these two detectives got their start as doing misdemeanor follow-up. So they were doing follow-up work for the municipal prosecutor's office, specifically on domestic violence crimes, misdemeanor crimes. And after they were doing that work for a little while, they found themselves spending the majority of their time looking at misdemeanor domestic violence cases that really should be felony strangulation cases. And so what ended up happening was, over the course of time, we'd sent them out to a lot of training and developed their expertise in investigating these types of crimes. And then at one point, you look at them and you go, well, you're actually a real detective, a full detective that's looking at felony crimes. So our detectives look at felony crimes only. Misdemeanor crimes are generally left to patrol division. And so we created two detective positions for them because of the expertise that they did or that they developed over the years. And immediately we started seeing prosecution.
All right. We have a listener question by email. This is a question about whether drugs in the state are coming from out of state or being manufactured in state.
A lot of drugs being shipped in. A lot of drugs being shipped through some version of the mail. U.S. Postal Service, FedEx. And that's nothing new for Alaska. We've always produced some of our own drugs here, but generally speaking, one of the differences between Alaska and the lower 48 is lower 48 moves a lot of drugs by vehicles from state to state because they can, where Alaska ships a lot of drugs through the mail. Fentanyl has made it much worse because the fentanyl in pill form is very, very easy to put in the mail and ship it to your target location.
What about vessel traffic?
Very difficult to intercept. It does happen. The feds are looking at how they can kind of do some more interdiction in Alaska with vessels, but we are a very large state, so yeah. It's very challenging to do that sort of stuff. But I would say the mail by far is where the most is coming from.
Interesting. That's good information to have because I've always wondered about how, you know, we have a very long coastline, pretty porous border when it comes to, and lots of vessel traffic going in and out. And I've often wondered, yikes, how would you ever address that? But it sounds like a lot more is coming by mail. It's a faster delivery route, certainly. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Pete is in Anchorage. Pete, hello?
Hi there. I'm not trying to change the subject, but here's a question I've wondered about for years, and this speaks to how the town has changed so much. The subject is bicycle thievery. Anybody who's got any kind of a valuable bicycle is so paranoid anymore to go anywhere. Even if you can lock it, it has changed so much that you can barely walk in someplace and then you find your bicycle is stolen. And I, for one, have had a couple of bikes stolen. And it changes the mentality so much of enjoying going places on your bike or whatever because you cannot leave them without being paranoid. And I'll just leave it at that.
You know, what I think that Pete brings up an interesting thought about the perception of crime, too. When something like that happens, it changes how you sort of perceive your community and your level of safety. How big a factor is that perception that people have about, oh, Anchorage is a dangerous city?
The perception of crime, the fear of crime, is far outweighs what the actual crime is. You heard Mr. Skidmore mentioned earlier that crime overall in Alaska and Anchorage as well has been going down for quite some time. And we always kind of focus on mid-90s for that real high point.
Yeah.
And we've seen both property and violent crime, has been declining throughout the years. But that's not the way we are as human beings. That's not how human emotion works. You know, if we're a victim of a crime or we know somebody that's a victim of a crime, that hits home a lot more than somebody standing in front of you and saying, yeah, but the crime rate's down. Like, nobody cares about the crime rate being down when you were victimized or a family member or a friend was victimized. So, and the other, you know, kind of contributing factor right now is we all have social media accounts and we get a lot of our information based on an algorithm that gives us, that feeds us information that may or may not be correct, that also feeds into that emotional piece of having crime in a community.
Mm-hmm. Crimes sometimes get dismissed. We've talked a little about that. But is there a percentage change that you have in mind that you want to see in this regard? How many more go to court than are happening now? And do you know how Alaska compares in that regard to other states? Do more cases get dismissed here than in other cities and states? Is that something that you're aware of?
Well, I can speak for the municipality, but I haven't done any comparative analysis to other states. I will say that looking at numbers, a recently concluded 12-month period compared to the previous year, our conviction rate was up about 70% from the previous year. So that was about early 24th or early 25 through early 26 compared to the previous year. So that's one metric of success that shows, you know, our system is working. At least on the criminal justice side.
Is there an actual partnership plan that is available for the public to see, or is this sort of inner workings between the state and the city?
We have a written memorandum of agreement that outlines the different areas of our task force and identifies which type of personnel each government will send. and suggests a meeting schedule. So we do have a document. I believe the ADN has published it. So it's out there in the world.
And Chief Case, you'd mentioned some in the past open positions. What are your staffing levels now compared to the past? And how are you feeling about that?
We've reduced our vacancies by 50% since July of 2024. We've had two full academies. We haven't had a full academy since 2020. And our June academy is going to look, I don't know if it's going to be full or not yet. We're still working through that process, but it's definitely going to be bigger than what we've had in the last couple of years. So three pretty solid academies in a row. The staffing is coming back. Our trajectory was we were thinking it was going to take about 5 years to get our staffing back, and we're well ahead of schedule. So things are looking good. Right now, we have 48 of our new officer employees that are either in field training or they're in the academy. So when we talk about having two back-to-back full academies, neither of those two academies are on the street full officers by themselves, handling calls for service by themselves. So the public hasn't even seen that impact yet. But we've really been building what this looks like over the last 18 to 20 months so that when we have more officers, we can immediately start putting them in the places that we know we need them. For example, our retail theft unit, two people, we're going to expand that out to four. We know that already. So that structure, that shell has already been built, and we've done that in several different areas. I mentioned the two domestic violence detectives. We're looking at expanding that unit as well.
We have an email question from Chuck who says, How is Anchorage addressing the missing and murdered Indigenous individuals rates? So many unsolved cases. Thanks for your consideration for the families.
So we have been working on that. And primarily one of the things that we're working on is data and information. The person that sent in the question had a data piece to that. We just actually produced our first dashboard yesterday, as a matter of fact. And so that's something that we're going to make public here in the upcoming weeks. But, when you think about missing persons in general, we haven't been looking at it from a long-term view like we're looking now at MMIP or murder missing Indigenous persons data. And so that's one of the challenges that we have when we talk about that subset of missing persons. We don't have that subset of data, so we just kind of shrug our shoulders and go, a missing person is handled the same no matter what. And now what we're doing is when we collect the information coming in, whether somebody's missing, we find out what region they're from, we collect that racial ethnic data, the gender data, and it doesn't drop off when they're found. So if you think normal missing persons case, as soon as they're found, then they're cleared from the system, they're not considered missing, and that data goes away because historically nobody's asked us, well, how many people are missing in Anchorage a year? And what's the racial makeup of those folks that are missing? And are they from Anchorage or are they visiting? Nobody's ever asked us those questions before. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't really collect the information that way. Our goal was to investigate them, find people, and then move on to the next case. So you're going to start to see a lot more information coming out of APD. So we'll be able to answer some of the questions on what that landscape looks like.
All right, we're almost out of time. John, one last question here in just a few seconds. Are there other agreements here or in other states, cities that have cross-designation similar to what we've been discussing here? Was this modeled on something else or is this brand new?
There are cross-designations that have been done with the federal government and between the state and federal government, between municipalities and the federal government, between tribes and federal governments. So the idea of cross-deputizing is not anything new, but cross-deputizing between the state and municipality, it's a little different. I would tell you we started it about a year ago, though, when the municipality's attorney's prosecutor's office was short-staffed, and they asked the state to help prosecute some of those cases. Okay. I did one of those cases for them. So this isn't a new idea. It's just sort of a new way to use an old idea.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks to our guests, APD Chief Sean Case, Anchorage Municipal Attorney Eva Gardner, and Department of Law's John Skidmore. Thanks to our engineer, Crystal Hyatt, our producer, Emily Messner, our editor, Annie Feit, and Wesley Early helped us out on the phones. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.